quiet when you do it.
I'm gonna talk.
I'm reading, okay? Right.
House Committee on Labor, May 5th, 1989, 8 a.m. Hearing Room D, public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2684. Work session on House Bill 3283, 2569, 2049, 2841, and 2842.
Get on, Laverne. Keep these comments off the date. Call the House Labor Committee to order. This morning, we're going to start out with a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2684. Then we'll go into work session on the remaining bills. We do have one.
Getting things in gear here.
Marcia King should be first.
Okay, Marcia King.
Burton coming? He may come.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Labor Committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Marcia King. I'm the administrator of the Salem Housing Authority. However, today I'm here on behalf of the Association of Oregon Housing Authorities. The association has requested passage of House Bill 2684 and urges your favorable consideration of it. Oregon has 21 housing authorities that are empowered to provide housing to low-income households under the laws of Oregon, ORS Chapter 456. Although we are chartered by formal resolutions of local governments, we are for the most part administratively independent of city, county, and state government. Housing authorities have their own personnel policies, our own salary and retirement plans, and we have our own methods of purchasing workers' compensation insurance. We are before you today to ask that the law be amended so that housing authorities can join a self-insurance group. Currently, we all utilize private insurance carriers for the purposes of covering large claims when they occur. We could save money by belonging to a self-insurance group. Preliminary information indicates that we could save about 10% annually on our premiums. If this bill is not passed, we will continue to pay our claims just as we are now doing, but we are looking for ways to manage our affairs more efficiently. Joining a self-insurance group would allow us to reduce our administrative costs. The bill is fairly simple. It would amend ORS 656-430, allowing housing authorities the same privileges now accorded to cities, counties, school districts, special districts, intergovernmental agency, and regional councils of government. We understand that once we are enabled by law to join a self-insurance group, we would have to apply individually to the state's workers' compensation division. If we were successful, we would be assigned to a group, most likely the group that is managed by the city and county's insurance carriers. Recently, Oregon housing authorities have taken several steps to reduce our insurance costs. 2 years ago, for example, Oregon housing authorities formed a self-insurance group for liability and property coverage. That insurance group has been very successful. In that two-year period, we have established reserves that exceed $3 million, and we are already experiencing substantial premium savings. I have just received a copy of the group's second annual report, and I will leave it with the chair. Providing a means for us to join the self-insurance group for workers' compensation will be just another way that we can reduce our insurance costs. That concludes my testimony. I would be glad to answer any questions that you may have.
Committee, have any questions?
I'd like to ask, if I may.
Representative Durfler.
Yeah, where are you insured now? Which are you insured by a private company or with Salem?
The Salem Housing Authority is insured by Liberty Northwest.
Okay. And why do you feel like you could save 10%? Would you save it in administrative costs or in reduction of accident costs? Or where do you think the savings would come from?
In administrative costs. And we did an analysis last year based on if we were to join a self-insurance group, that the premium cost compared to what we're now paying. Okay. And it was about 10%.
Marcia, if this were to pass, how are you going to are all 21 of you going to go in together, or are you going to be separate?
Each individual housing authority would have the option to join the pool.
Okay.
Chair?
Yes, Representative.
I would imagine there are certain rules of responsibility already established.
I'm going to have the department come up and explain for the committee, though, yes, there are indeed rules of responsibility.
And they'd have to meet that criteria.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
In fact, many of them are laid out in the bill as current law, but we'll have Mr. Young explain those rules. Representative Whitty?
Yes, I remember last session we dealt with the subject.
Mm-hmm.
And as I remember, any group that's added that has the option either is allowed in the pool or they remain as they insured as they are.
Correct.
That's right.
That's right. Okay. Thank you very much, Marcia. Mr. Egan? Richard Egan. Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Richard Egan. I am here supporting Bill 2684 on behalf of the housing authorities. I represent the City County Insurance Services Trust, which is the self-insurance program of the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Counties. I can probably amplify on some of Marcia's answers to your questions, because I'm the probably the administrator of the program that they would be seeking to join. My background, I've been working in insurance for 20 years, been working with the CIS program for 5.5, and I'm an attorney. The CIS program, the City County program, provides property, liability, and work comp insurance to Oregon cities and counties and some associated entities. We cover, for one thing or another, three-fourths of the cities in the state and half the counties and approximately four dozen associated entities, including housing authorities. Our trust agreement allows us to write coverage for cities, counties, and public bodies which are created by a city or a county under statutory or charter authority. Now, that includes housing authorities because they are created by a city or a county under a separate statute. They have formed their own pool for property and liability, but there are still a number of smaller housing authorities that we provide property and liability insurance to. And from our standpoint, as far as our trust agreement goes, I mean, we could write work comp for them. It's the statutory language that would prevent us. The history of this, and I've passed out a little summary of the history of this work comp statute, because I've been involved with all the changes it's gone through since 85. The statute allowing groups of employers to form work comp self-insured groups was passed back in the mid-70s. It required all employers to agree to be jointly and severally liable for each other's obligations. As a result, no such groups were ever formed. We came to the legislature on behalf of cities and counties in 1985 asking that the joint and several liability provision be eliminated, because for one thing, it probably forced cities and counties to violate the Oregon constitutional prohibitions on lending credit. This was done, and working with the work comp division, we formed a self-insured pool for cities and counties in 1986. I've attached a summary of our growth in premium and participation. We now have 129 units of local government in our work comp pool. In 1987, the special districts, school boards, and some other representatives came to you asking that they be granted the same exemption from joint and several liability. And this was done, and in 1988, July of 88, the special districts formed a work comp group modeled after ours. The reasons that housing authorities or any entity can save money through a pool are really twofold. One, we charge less premium to start with. We use the NCCI pure rates, which are the rates established by the National Bureau and approved by the state, which are supposed to be produce premiums sufficient to pay the cost of the claims and the cost of administering an insurance program. Safe, Liberty, and all other private carriers use pure rates as a starting point, but they load at least 15% additional on as a profit margin. We're not out to make a profit. Secondly, we feel that ultimately lower costs will result because of improved loss control services. I'm not here to malign anyone, but the private carriers tend not to pay a great deal of attention to very small entities.
We've noticed that.
And we do, because most of our members are, I mean, we don't have the city of Portland and Multnomah County. I mean, we have, you know, the smaller ones. We insure Shonico and Elkton and places like that. And we visit those people with our loss control professionals. One reason we can do that is that we probably also have their property and liability coverage, so we've got a little bit of economy of scale there. My understanding is that the work comp division has some concerns about housing authorities because most of them are fairly small and their funding base may be different than other public bodies. I'd just like to say two things. One, I mean, we have worked with the work comp division very closely to get our group going, and it was very interesting because it was the first group work comp program in the state, and we, you know, both we and the work comp division were kind of breaking new ground. Secondly, if the issue were should the housing authorities in Oregon form their own self-insurance pool for work comp, my answer as a professional pool administrator would be no. They're too small. There's not enough of them. There's not enough spread of risk. Now, the work comp division has certainly the authority to draft rules which would prevent that from happening. I'm not sure that's necessary as a practical matter, because one of the requirements for a group work comp program, just the same as if you're individually self-insured, is that you have to have reinsurance and a bond. And frankly, there's no reinsurers that want to write a coverage for a group unless it has at least $1 million of premium. Even the special districts program, in its first year, it's grown enough now to where it's not a problem. They had trouble finding a reinsurer because they just weren't big enough starting out. We, and I'm sure the work comp people can, you know, fill you in more detail, but basically the way it works is we collect the money. I mean, we charge premium to the entities just as a carrier would. One of the things that we have to do is we have to buy reinsurance, we have to buy a bond. These amounts of reinsurance and amounts of a bond are set by the work comp division, supposedly sufficient to pay all the claims should we run out of money. And as members join, and you know, we started out with 68, we have 129 now, as members have joined the CIS program over the years, the amount of the bond and the amount of the reinsurance has increased proportionately, so that from our standpoint, adding housing authorities to our program for work comp is a natural thing to do because we already have a lot of them for property and liability. And I don't personally know of any, you know, reason that we can't work with the work comp division to, you know, accomplish this very smoothly.
Richard, I'm going to stop you there.
What you're saying then is that
if this bill were to pass, by adding the housing authorities, that they would be lumped in with the bonding and reinsurance?
From our
that you currently have with your group, big group?
From a practical standpoint, our group, there's only two groups, and our group is the one that they're eligible to join.
Right.
And I think it's unlikely that they would go out, especially because in terms of the savings, it might be noted, too, that we would not, the Housing Authority of Portland and maybe even the Housing Authority of Salem as entities would probably not join our program because they're large enough that they're on retro plans or something where they're getting benefits from SAFE or Liberty that we can't match. It would be the smaller ones, and there's no way that they're going to form a group of their own.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Director.
Basically, all they're doing is just changing companies. Isn't that sort of what we're doing?
Well, again, a group rate is what it boils down to.
It's not quite that simple. No, they're going to be self-insured and liable for their losses.
Mr. Chairman, there is something that the entities themselves have tended to forget, and that is that people are liable for their own losses no matter what they do. If they buy insurance from SAFE or Liberty, and for some reason SAFE or Liberty can't pay the losses, all they're doing is transferring the risk by contract. If those carriers for some reason can't pay, the state's going to go back to the individual entities anyway. Which is the same as in our program. If we ran out of money, if the reinsurance ran out, if the bond ran out, each individual entity is still responsible for its losses, the same as they are by law anyway.
Let's have Mr. Young up now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the handout. I've been wanting to have you come over and tell us the status of your...
We're doing okay.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. You hadn't signed up, Larry.
No, Mr. Chairman, I'm able to answer any questions. I didn't have any prepared testimony.
Any questions of Mr. Young?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Mannix.
Mr. Young, would you see any compliance problems, any different from currently occur with cities, counties, special districts, and so on?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Larry Young, Compliance Section Workers' Compensation Division. Representative Mannix, it's every session we have a group of employers we add to this section of the law. And if I may do my tape of voice of doom, when the operations are running, there's really not a problem. If you look at the section it was alluded to this morning, is that any employer who joins this group is individually liable. As we add these employers, it becomes very important of what their stability is down the road and how we have access or how easy it is to access any assets those companies have in the event this group that was just presented to you decides to fold up and there is not sufficient funds available. We are then have to go back against each one of those separate employers and try to recover the losses that's being paid on those claims. We have adjustment reserve funds, we have the deposit, we have the bonds. The question always becomes how stable are these employers if in the event we have to go against them individually. Unfortunately, this particular group, as I understand their statute, and I did not study it that much, their assets are pretty well, their property cannot be put a lien against. But we're talking way down the road. It becomes a decision of yours whether or not you're concerned with what happened or what could happen X number of years down the road. I feel like a broken record on this, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Maddox.
Well, basically, the question will be whether or not we're satisfied that we're in a position through oversight and as the final arbiter in terms of public bodies of the state as to who pays for what, as to whether or not we're comfortable with them going forward, knowing that ultimately the public holds the bag if something goes wrong.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, further questions? Was that Representative Dominic?
Yeah. Yes. What is a bonding? How do you calculate what type of a bond they need? This is probably a dumb, simple question.
Basically, on an annual basis, we, for the whole group, not just for the individual employers, we review and set reserves for all their outstanding claims.
I mean, what kind of a, do you use a formula for saying that if there's this many claims, they've got to be bonded for this amount? Is there a formula? How do you come up with that number?
Actually, it's the amount of claims costs they have yet to expend on all the claims they have. We look at each individual claim.
And they have to be bonded for the amount that is that remains. Is that correct?
That's correct.
The reserves.
Yes.
That's correct.
Would each individual housing authority, I think they said there were 21 of them, be responsible for their own losses, or would the 21 combine and cover each other's losses?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Durfer, we would probably not allow those, that small a group, to group together as a individual group. They'd have to join with one of the other two groups that are currently. But if in the event the group disband and the bond ran out, the bond amount we had established was expended, the surety, the excess insurance did not cover it, then we would go against each one of those housing authorities individually to collect the difference. If you think about it, the areas you have claims are occupational disease claims that no one know about right now down the road, and any permanent or fatal disability claims that are being paid out over X number of years. So 20 years from now, everybody's gone home, they've quit, they don't like it anymore, and we run out of surety deposit, we didn't reserve right, we didn't guess right back at this point in time, and our excess insurance is not going to pay it because it hasn't reached the amount before it kicks in, then, and we still have payments to make, then we have to go against each one of those individual employers to cover it. To get that money.
One more question, if I can.
Go ahead, Representative.
Has this happened in the past? Have we had losses like that?
Not for the groups. The groups have just been for a short period of time. We've had some bankrupt self-insurers, but we've had only one couple of instances where we haven't had sufficient funds to cover.
We haven't had enough experience, really, to pass.
That's correct.
Representative Whitty.
Again, the housing authorities have the option individually as to whether they join the group or not, right?
That's correct.
And when they join the group, they're the same as a county. They're no different than a county. They're no different than a city.
That's correct.
And one housing authority is treated the same as another housing authority, which is treated the same as another city or another county. So one housing authority's problems don't reflect any more on another housing authority that's a member of the group than it does on another city that is a member of the group. Is that true?
That's true.
All right, thank you.
Further questions of Mr. Warner?
Representative Johnson. Give us a quick assessment of how the city-county programs work as you see it.
Currently, it's working real fine. It's just basically what we're doing is setting up a small insurance company that's run by the group.
I understand they're building a building over here and a few things like that.
I'm not aware of that.
I don't think we'll go see that once in a
while. Better be after lunch, Mr. Chairman.
I saw that. Is that your folks' building?
That is our building. Like an insurance company, you can have an enormous amount of money that we hold for a long time. And the trustees figured that, first of all, the lead in the association.
Just yes or no. God. It's your building.
It's an investment. Okay. But
it is your building.
Okay. Thank you, Philip. Okay, gentlemen. What do you want to do with House Bill 2684?
I'd like to go into work session, Mr.
All right, we're in work session. House Bill 2684.
Move House Bill 2684 to the goes to the floor.
Yes. Representative Whitty moves House Bill 2684 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
I guess I would.
Representative Johnson.
we're sure going to keep our eyes on this group. This thing got started over my dead body. And I still don't like the idea because I think there's some risks out there that we aren't anticipating. I'll vote for it, but I'm going to be watching.
Yeah, that's why I appreciated Mr. Egan coming in this morning for the report on the status of that little insurance company.
Not so little.
Any other comments? Vern, call the roll, please.
Representative Jerkwood?
Aye.
Representative Dominick?
Aye.
Representative
Griffin? Aye.
Representative Manning?
Aye.
Representative
Walden? Aye.
Representative Whitty?
Aye.
Representative
Chairman Schiffer? Aye. House Bill 26, is that right? 2684 is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any volunteers?
Glad to, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Whitty will carry the bill. Okay. We got a work session on House Bill 3283, and we've got, that was the one we had to send back to legislative council to have the amendments drafted.
3283.
3283.
Oh, geez.
I remember this one.
Yeah,
House Bill 15,000.
You should have, we sent around, and if you don't, I will give you another one. You should have the dash six dash amendments.
Six.
Which is, I don't know where he keeps. Which are the amendments that respond to the Mannix marked up bill for amendments.
I don't have dash six.
Well, I don't either. He's coming.
I'm giving them out.
Which we don't have them. They're coming.
I'll give you some more.
Max, did these amendments essentially, can we go just by these amendments and gotten stuff with the,
yes.
Yeah, so we can go just off the dash six amendments, can't we?
Essentially, yes, you can.
Mr. Chairman? Was there a question? Representative Mayor.
If you'd like, I would be willing to move the dash six amendments, and I had a comment.
For discussion? Okay. Representative Mannix moves the dash six amendments. To your motion, Representative Mannix.
Thank you. The dash six amendments do incorporate our prior discussions. I do want to point out that on page two, lines 3 through 5. I want to explain this clause just for purposes of the record. It says, as used in this section, dependent means a child, spouse, parent, or grandparent, or under individual who is a dependent of the employee for purposes of state income tax law. I want to explain that this clause, which limits this, or other individual who is a dependent of the employee for purposes of state income tax law, is not meant to limit the others. For instance, if it turns out the child is not a dependent, or the spouse isn't a dependent, or the parent or grandparent's not a dependent, they're in, regardless of being a dependent. But then we've got the clause which is meant to include anybody else. And I just wanted to clarify that in case anyone ever argued that, say the child's 22 and is no longer dependent, but is living in an apartment and the father or mother has to go visit and help take care of him one day. I don't want someone to say, well, he's no longer your dependent. I just wanted to clarify that. Otherwise, I think this incorporates all of the changes which we had discussed before.
Okay. Other further comments?
On page two, Mr. Chair, is the this was a compilation of both the Mannix proposal and the, I believe it was the dash five amendments that we passed before. On page two, it defines sick leave for purposes of schools as absence from duty because of school employee's illness or injury, or as otherwise provided for by law or provisions of a collective bargaining agreement. This was a problem that they had with the definition of providing any leave, even for parental leave, with and staying within their definition of sick leave. So that is included.
May I comment on that?
Go ahead, Representative Mannix.
I also want to make it clear, though, that we're not by implication saying that there has to be paid sick leave for one to care for an ill dependent. That is left up to other provisions of law or collective bargaining agreements. Just in case anybody is ever arguing that, they can read the record or listen to the tape.
Aren't we doing a good job?
Well, I'll tell you, I appreciate the comments, really. Just remember last session, those of you who were here, we now have multiple lawsuits, AG opinions, and everything else flying around.
Just doing Bowie's job.
Okay. We're in good moods today.
Yeah.
I want to take just a minute to read the couple more sections here myself. You've checked.
You want me to go through it?
Oh, I don't know. We don't need to go through it. I just want to...
The essence of the bill is that an employee shall be allowed leave without pay to care for an ill dependent. The dependent is defined as Representative Mannix has just spoken to. It also includes and allows an employer to give paid leave if that employer wants to. It prohibits the employer from firing, reprimanding, or otherwise disciplining.